Laudato Jesus Christus, Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Tuesday, March the 25th, Pope Francis encourages the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors in its work, noting that its mission goes far beyond the application of protocols. Over 270 children are amongst the victims of Israeli attacks on Gaza in the past week. But first, the Pope continues his convalescence at Casa Santa Marta and celebrates Mass in one of its little chapels. In the Vatican, I'm Linda Bordoni. On Tuesday, the Holy See Press Office offered journalists some details on Pope Francis's recovery at his residence of Casa Santa Marta in the Vatican since being discharged from Rome's Gemelli Hospital on Sunday, following a 38-day stay for bilateral pneumonia and a polymicrobial respiratory infection. In the remarks, the Holy See Press Office noted that the Pope continues his treatment and physical therapy, as well as celebrating Mass in the little chapel on the second floor. Deborah Castellano-Lubov reports.
Pope Francis's convalescence continues at his residence of Casa Santa Marta with his continued treatment, mobility and respiratory-related physical therapy, especially for voice recovery, the Holy See Press Office noted on Tuesday. They said he spends his time praying, doing some work, and has been concelebrating Mass in one of his residence's little chapels. No precise details have been provided regarding the Pope's schedule for the coming days, nor for future events such as the various Jubilee celebrations or Holy Week rites. His recovery is being closely monitored, and they are awaiting the expected clinical improvements. The Pope needs a convalescence period of a good 2 months. The Holy See Press Office noted on Tuesday that some decisions are under consideration and will be made based on the improvements that occur in the coming weeks. Wednesday, the general audience will not take place, just as it had not in the previous weeks. Instead, the prepared text of the Pope's catechesis will, as it has been in the past, be distributed in written form. The same is likely to happen on Sunday for the Angelus, though updates are still awaited. Both Dr. Alfieri and Dr. Carbone, who spoke at Gemelli on Saturday, previously mentioned the good spirits the Pope regained. The most dangerous phase of his illness has passed, and the most severe infections, they noted, have been overcome, in which his life was at danger. In an interview published on Tuesday with Corriere della Sera, Dr. Alfieri recalled that the most serious moment occurred on the afternoon of February 28th, when Pope Francis's condition worsened due to a bronchospasm crisis. For the first time, he said, I saw tears in the eyes of some of the people around him, people who, as I have come to understand during the hospitalization, truly love him as a father. We were all aware that the situation had deteriorated further and that there could be a real risk he may not make it. The doctor said we had to decide whether to stop and let him go or to push forward with all possible medications and therapies, despite the high risk of damaging other organs. In the end, Dr. Alfieri said, we chose to fight, saying that the final decision was made by the Pope himself. Pope Francis, the doctor noted, from the beginning, has insisted on being fully informed about his health from day one and to share with everyone all the details. I'm Deborah Castellano-Lubov.
The Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors is holding its annual ordinary plenary assembly from the 24th to the 28th of March. Pope Francis has taken the opportunity to again express his deep gratitude for its precious service. In a message he addressed to participants, the Pope said its efforts to ensure the church is a safe place for minors are like oxygen for local churches. And he stressed the critical importance of healing survivors. Lisa Zingarini reports.
In the message which he signed on the 20th of March before he was discharged from Gemelli Hospital, Pope Francis encouraged the Pontifical Commission to continue its precious service to the Church. He remarked that its mission cannot be reduced to the mere application of protocols and good practices, but involves promoting safeguards, integrating education, prevention and listening. By establishing prevention policies, even in the remotest communities, he said, the Commission contributes to a collective commitment that every child and vulnerable person will find safety within the Church. To advance this mission, the Pope asked for 3 commitments. First, he called for increased collaboration between the Commission and the dicasteries of the Roman Curia. Second, he urged the Commission to offer hospitality and care for the spiritual wounds of victims and survivors in the style of the Good Samaritan, a style that moves beyond bureaucratic procedures and instead fosters genuine healing through mercy. Third, Pope Francis emphasized the importance of building partnerships with entities outside the Church, including civil authorities, experts and associations, so that safeguarding may become a universal language. Acknowledging the progress made over the past decade in building a safety network within the Church, the Pope insisted on the importance of listening to the pain of survivors, warning against the temptation to dismiss grief instead of healing it. Concluding, Pope Francis thanked the Commission members for their prayerful closeness as he recovers from pneumonia and assured them of his own spiritual accompaniment. I am Lisa Zengarini.
Israel has warned that it will continue its military offensive and seize more Palestinian territory in Gaza unless Hamas releases the remaining Israeli hostages. As bombardments intensify, killing thousands and displacing more, the humanitarian crisis worsens for the people. Francesca Merlo reports.
Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz has warned that Israel will continue its military campaign and seize more Palestinian territory in Gaza unless Hamas agrees to release the remaining hostages. His remarks come as mediators attempt to revive a ceasefire deal that collapsed when Israel resumed air and ground operations on the 18th of March after failed negotiations with Hamas to extend the two-month truce. Israel has stated it will not allow Hamas to retain control or military power in Gaza following the group's 7th of October attack in 2023. However, its offensive has caused unprecedented destruction, with entire neighborhoods reduced to rubble and a desperate and increasingly worsening humanitarian crisis. The Israeli military has launched a new ground offensive in central and southern Gaza, intensifying bombardments that have killed hundreds of Palestinians. Israeli forces have already seized most of northern Gaza and are now expanding attacks southward, particularly in Khan Yunis and Rafah. Once considered safe zones for displaced Palestinians, these areas are now battlegrounds and families who had fled and taken refuge in the areas are being forced to flee again, except with no refuge left. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the latest military operation aims to pressure Hamas into releasing the remaining hostages. Hamas is believed to be holding 59 hostages, with 24 thought to be alive, out of the 250 taken during its attack on Israel. Many have been released or their bodies returned through negotiated exchanges. Meanwhile, the humanitarian situation in Gaza is deteriorating rapidly. The Hamas-run health ministry reports over 50,000 Palestinians killed, including more than 20,000 children. The United Nations has warned of impending famine, particularly in northern Gaza, where aid remains completely blocked. Hospitals struggle to function, lacking electricity, water and basic medical supplies, while thousands of injured civilians continue to go untreated and more arriving in need of help. I'm Francesca Merlo.
And an Israeli strike on Tuesday in southwestern Syria killed at least four people as Israeli troops occupying the area clashed with local residents. After 14 years of war, the fall of Bashar al-Assad's regime marks a new chapter for Syria, but the nation faces huge uphill challenges, with 90% of the population living in poverty and over a million displaced Syrians now preparing to return. It begins a process of rebuilding. Syrian filmmaker Waad al-Kateb, who fled into exile during the Assad regime, spoke to UN News about how her country stands at a crossroads and is in need of international support.
Everyone is having different concerns, different issues. You know, it's not easy at all. The country is really tired. Economics is very bad. There's no electricity, no water. There's so many issues with every level. But I think what everyone is having in common is like the feeling that it's definitely a new beginning. I think one of the most important things today is really to acknowledge, you know, that this Syria is very different example from any previous like conflict areas that the world has known. You know, like this is a new example. This is a new model, even how the regime has fallen, what the next step would be, who's taking control now and what we should do for the future of that. Now we should put all the resources, everything we can, to make this example works, because it's not just win for Syria itself, it wins for humanity. This should be now supported in any possible way, because this should work.
And that was Wad al-Khateeb speaking there to UN News. And amid ongoing US-mediated talks between Ukraine and Russia, the Superior General of the Congregation of the Mission, also known as the Vincentians, Father Thomas Mavrich, recently visited seven Vincentian houses in the war-torn country. In an interview with Vatican Radio, he explained that everyone, from the clergy to the laity, is receiving support, both in the form of humanitarian aid and other expressions of solidarity. Father Thomas said his experience in the country has left him reflecting on the unshakable faith and unwavering hospitality of the Ukrainian people, even 3 years from Russia's full-scale invasion.
I think these two points that I mentioned, one is the faith, unbreakable faith, even after 3 years of war, of unbearable pain, they continue in their places. Many, you know, where at any time a drone can fall, some other kind of equipment can hit their house, their apartment, the church, where more people will meet. But they continue to gather, they continue to pray. That's for one. The secondly is that they are so open for anybody for help. The family became much larger than before. You will think that parishes in Kharkiv, for example, I witnessed that, it would be empty. No, the other way around. They come, and not just Catholics. When the war started, you know, it was empty because everybody left. But then soon after, a few weeks after, pastor came back and people started to come back. But not just Catholics, because there are not many left. But then you have other, like a lot of Orthodox or people who did not practice any faith because of their openness to help in any need that person has or had in that moment. Like humanitarian aid, they were received as brothers and sisters, no matter whom. And now they continue to come also to pray. And third, it's what I can just add, what Pope Francis is repeating all over again, that the war is never good. The war never finds a solution. It's never the way to peace, because it's a completely other way to take, to arrive to a true peace.
And that was Father Thomas Mavrich, the Vincentian Superior General, speaking there to Svitlana Djukovic. And finally, according to observers, the Sudanese army has killed hundreds of people in an airstrike on a market in the country's western Darfur region. The Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary RFS that are vying for power since April 2023 have repeatedly been accused of shelling civilian areas. And that's all for this edition of Vatican and World News. You can join us tomorrow at the same time or follow us on Vatican News, Facebook, X and Instagram. My thanks go to Bruno Orti in studio in the Vatican. I'm Linda Bordoni. Bye-bye.